I missed you at the Christmas party yesterday.
Yeah. I have to wake up early.
You regret?
No, I don't regret anything.
You know,
although I am still tired.
Yeah, I was going to say, did it really materially change?
Nah, probably not.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how these things work, but I don't know. It didn't sound, as much as like I would have loved to see you and all my great friends from the Sportsnet environs.
Here's the good thing about you not being there. That was actually fine because I see you. You know, like I was at your place last week.
Yes.
So you're the dead last person I actually needed to see there.
Dead last?
Dead last. Yeah. I met the janitor. I was like, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scary looking guy.
Really?
No, but you've seen that one maintenance dude in the building that walks around who's like really buff. And
yeah.
I told you one time I saw him like punch a wall.
That was terrifying.
It was one of the scariest things that ever happened.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, dude. He was just.
Was he actually there yesterday?
No.
Okay.
And he's not Jerry. He's a maintenance guy. But he's tough as hell. He's got tattoos.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's intense. That guy. But yeah, if he was there, I definitely would have tried to suck up.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been like, dude, I seen you around the building punching stuff. Yeah.
I tell you, I didn't make that mess in the bathroom.
Yeah,
I swear to God. Whatever people are telling you, it's a lie.
I'm shy. I'm toilet shy. I'm never there. But it was nice.
It was nice. I've been to them before. Honestly, every time.
But they've been gone for forever. COVID wiped out the Christmas party.
I guess that's true. Was there not one last year?
No, there was just a little gathering that you and I went to. That was basically just like a couple people.
Okay, you have to.
But this was like a full-fledged real office party. You know what's crazy is, I'm going to break some news to you.
Okay. What?
A lot of people work at Sportsnet.
Yeah, no, I know.
I was not aware.
Yeah, I know a lot.
Yeah, this bar that we had.
You thought it was just you and the people that.
I thought it was like me and Armin.
Yeah.
And then a couple of the other shows. Mm. No, turns out. Massive operation out there.
Mm-hmm. Like behind the scenes, there are people like accountants and like account executives and ad sales and people behind the scenes.
Yeah. But I was
directors, camera operators.
Yeah, but I was barking with the old dogs, you know?
What does that mean?
I was barking with the old dogs. I was in the yard.
Oh. Wait. So what, you were just hanging out with old people? What do you mean?
Yeah. I was
because you're old?
Yeah, and the sports at olds.
Okay, good.
Yeah, but we were all
that
doing,
makes sense because you are old.
We were doing the whole, hey, how long have you been at the company? I was like,
Well,
because you know what I didn't realize? That it was SportsNet's 25th anniversary.
Well, I was just going to say, this reminds me.
We had the awesome 25th anniversary party for the fan.
Yes, where you kind of let me hang out with bark with the old dogs.
Yeah,
at that
I did
party,
let you bark with the old dogs.
Those are your old dogs. That was right before
our first old dogs. those are the old dogs. Yeah, that was right before our first show and you got hammered. I left you there.
Might have,
and you literally look at me like, where's my backpack? I was like, oh, boy. I literally left. And I was basically Superman. I went.
It's pretty rude of them to organize that party right before our first show ever.
Yeah. Yeah. But I legitimately left the party going, I got to take this one. This is, I got to drive the bus tomorrow.
Speaking of which, so. Brent Gunning, we were both at Brent Gunning's wedding. He showed me a picture I'd never seen from his wedding before.
I never saw any photos from his wedding.
It was a video of me dancing. You're also in the video,
but you don't.
Yeah, buddy.
Nice.
You should see the video. Actually, I have it. I'll show you in the break. I'll show you in the break.
That's amazing. I remember dancing to, do you know what came out the summer of Brent's wedding?
No.
Kiki, do you love me?
Oh, really?
Are you riding? Yeah, so I think I definitely did that dance that night.
Yeah.
I remember that, but I don't remember much else.
Maybe this is it. Oh, my.
Show me this after. I don't want to do video talk during the show.
No, I know. I don't have the sound up, but I'm going to send it to you.
No, but that is a reminder that I never got any photos from this thing. I badgered him about not coming to this thing, too. Here's what I'll say in your defense.
Uh-huh.
I was very much like, you know, you've go to some of these corporate events, and it's a pain in the ass. And this was nice. This was
it
actually like
is
a,
nice.
No,
in the ones
was,
that I've been
like
to,
said,
and I would have been
real...
there if I didn't have to wake up at 4:20 in the morning.
But your
what?
Thing.
No. I have receipts, man. I usually go to this thing. We've been together.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just saying that this to me is a you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound. Like if you would have been like, tomorrow,
oh, you're in rough shape today.
No, but I would say that I'm operating at not 100%.
Okay.
Here's the thing that happens to me at every single Christmas party.
Uh-huh.
This is every. I've done the exact same formula. I'm actually the most predictable person on earth. I don't know if I'm going to go. I don't know if I'm going to go. I don't know if I'm going to go. All right, I should go. All right, I get there. I'm like, oh, this sucks. I knew this would be bad. I hate this. All right, I'm talking to people that I don't want to have conversations with.
And then
I have the first beer, and I'm like, oh, this is nice. You know, this is all right. Okay, I hear the speech. All right, that's pretty good. Rousing. Everything, I'm moving forward. I'm like, okay. Actually, speech was good this year. But because you and I have the famous worst speech.
We'll never speak.
Yeah, I know. But we had that one speech that was like the funniest thing that has ever happened at any Christmas party. I get the second one. Now I'm starting to like really talk. And now all of a sudden, there was good.
The third one.
Well, it was good because I landed on the baseball guys for a little while, and you and I are going to do some baseball stuff. And there was a lot of hot baseball talk. You know, I was talking with Shy. I was talking with Blair. I was in Ben Nichols. I was in the heart of the baseball operation, mining all the, like, you know, just like a little goblin in there.
Secondhand insider stuff. Yeah, like, are you an insider? If you talk to the insiders and you get inside scoop from the insiders who are getting it from the real insiders?
Here's what I will say. I drank a lot last night, and I pitched fake trades to...
Oh, my God.
I was pitching fake trades to... I'm basically... This is the thing. I'm just a sleeper cell. I'm just a fan.
All these people have been in this business for 20 years, and it's like, would a regular old sports fan love to be at one of these parties? But they don't come because nobody wants to be. But that's you. You infiltrated the sports at party.
I was talking to Blair, and we were just having some conversations about his career. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, he's been sports writing since he was 18.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a real bona fides. Like, he has done the work. He has been everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like... Here's a fake trade that I made. I was trained on hockey reference, So I was pitching fake trades to them. They hated them all. Actually, Blair and I were a little aligned on potentially trying to trade for Soto. Mm-hmm. But
of course, who doesn't want Juan Soto?
There was a lot of hot Ohtani talk, and then there was and then the basketball guys showed up, saw Will and Alex and Grange, and I was like, here's my Siakam trades. I've already been on the trade machine. I got all my stuff lined up. We had some fun. It was a good time.
Grange just slipped into his most recent piece. He's like, I don't see colors so well. Like, what was that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he just slipped in. He was talking about the in-season tournament courts, and he's like, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't bother me because I don't see colors so well. It's like, Grange, you colorblind? That's an interesting way to bring that to light.
Grange is one of my favorite guys ever.
Yes.
He's one of the best dudes. Yeah. Like, actually one of the best dudes.
I mean, he's a legend in his pickup basketball league for some of the...
But that's the thing. He's just, he's an all-around... What do they call it? Renaissance man. He's a Renaissance man. He can do it all.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's a man. I just had a blast. It was a really fun
and
time.
And you bought one of his books, right? You have one of his Maple Leaf books in your apartment.
I actually didn't buy that. My dad bought me that.
Okay.
And I told you, when I first met him, I was like, you suck. You blame the fans. That was my first question when he showed up at my college for free to speak. I was like, first question, why do you suck? Why do you blame the fans?
And at that moment, he's like, it's all right. I'll never have to interact with this kid ever again.
Yeah, yeah.
Little did he know,
I would drive him to the brink multiple times.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it.
Yeah. I've done it to everybody, though.
That's true. The list is long.
Yeah.
Some notable people. Yeah. Some people that you had, I'm sure, like, fine little conversations with yesterday. Like,
but that's the thing.
Someone you're having a fine conversation with right now.
Here's the thing. Either it drives us to the brink and then we don't speak anymore.
Yeah.
Or it drives us to the brink and then we're tight as hell.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really the way. It's the crucible.
It's a crucible of knowing you test people.
Yeah,
that's true.
It is. No, I stress test you, stress test you, stress test you. And if you break, I'm like, ew, garbage. And if you're, I'm like, yes, the best. I really think it's the best way. I'm highly invested.
I don't know. I just try to be nice all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're so good at that. No, agreeable. You're notoriously nice. Yeah.
No, you're agreeable.
Yeah, you're agreeable. But like in a snivelly way.
What, like suck up way?
Yeah, yeah. You're not like a fun, oh man, that guy's so nice, he's so fun guy.
Yeah.
You're like hello.
I don't sound like that.
Yeah, you kind of do. You snivelly guy.
I have the sniffles, which is different than snivels.
But I'm saying you snivelly. You're snivelly.
I don't think that's true.
Arvin shook his head. He was like, "Yeah, that's bad."
He did.
He was like, "Man, you hit it." You tapped into the right thing. Anyway, all right, let's move on. It's enough Christmas party talk. But yes, I enjoyed it. I had a blast. And I hope that everybody's holiday parties are as good as ours. And
not on a Tuesday. because then I could have gone if it was on like Saturday. Oh, I know, yeah, it's tough.
Should have all been for you. You're just tired all the time.
Yeah, like, well, again, that's true. Yeah, obviously.
That's what I mean. If this would have been the one day where you got to have your beauty sleep and you're like, man, my kids, they're staying at their grandma's house and I get to have the bed to myself or something. My wife's at a conference. I'd have gone like, yeah, don't go there. But it's just like, oh, run of the mill. Like, you've come to baseball games with me during the middle of the week, during the show?
Not since I've been doing the morning show.
When did you, I thought you started the morning show at the very end, of, like the Rangers?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you 100%. Yeah, it feels like a month.
You're in a fog.
I've probably done the morning show for a month. Yeah, you're in a full fog. I couldn't tell you definitively. It was definitely like, October at some point.
I was going to say, the morning show, imagine me. I did the morning show during COVID, where you'd be at home, and I was like, I literally was Beautiful Mind writing on the chalkboard, like, is time real? What is, what day is it in my underwear?
Here's the thing. When you take long naps like I do, like 2 hour, it's like, what is, that's not that different from the sleep I take at night. I do, but the alarm is only, like, it's extremely, like, if I wanted to sleep up until my alarm is just, like, I have to get up. I have to make sure I pick up my kid at 3 o'clock. So if I slept, I could get conceivably, like, 4 hours of sleep when I get home, and I don't do that. But yeah, it's long enough that I'm like, yeah, the day is just, it's made up of four parts. It's not two parts, it's four parts. Who the hell knows? Mm-hmm. And especially when it's dark all the time. No, there is no delineation of time.
You know, I'm done with Christmas party talk. So I was going to say that it's when you're at a big company and you're bad with names like me.
You are doing the Christmas party talk.
Well, it's just, I was going to, my question to you is going to be, what do you think the best thing is about a Christmas party and what do you think the worst thing is?
Yeah, no, the worst thing is the thing you hit on, like,
when you get stuck on someone and even, and they're like, how are you? And they know everything about you. And
like, many, many years ago, one of these Christmas parties, like, I knew Luke Fox, we'd come on the radio, but I was like, hey, Luke. And then I thought he said something like, who are you? Like, what's your name? But it wasn't that, but there was like this, the most awkward interaction I've ever had, and none of us knowing exactly what's going on. But yeah, that's the type of interaction that is a nightmare for me. It's like, hey, do I know your name? Am I confident enough to come to the conversation with your name? Do you know my name? Do you know who I am? Do I sound like a jerk if I'm like, hey, I just assume you know who I am because I'm such a big deal. You know, I'm the host of the morning show. But No.
The reason people know who you are is because you're the loudest guy at the party. And then once you do two IPAs, your head starts bobbing and you're screaming on top of people. And they're like, who is this guy? And they're like,
His name
is Ben Ennis and he's the loudest human being on earth. The two loudest people on earth, my sister, when she used to answer the house phone when we were kids, I'd be like, hello? She'd scream, and then no one would ever be there. No one would call our house because our sister killed everyone. She sonic boomed everybody that showed up and called our house. And you at a Christmas party at 2x IPAs. Those are the two loudest things on earth that have ever been recorded, is just to let you know. Anyway,
I can't disagree.
Okay, so did you see the Jeff Passan thing on Ohtani? Because you and I are big in the Ohtani.
There's another Passan thing from today? No, like, I've seen every Passan thing on Ohtani.
This is a minor
thing.
About
how the other teams are punished if they make stuff? Yeah, that was the original report where it was like, Jays are going to do something big.
Yeah, but okay, this is my favorite thing. So he's like, teams meeting with Ohtani, he will hold it against them if those meetings are reported or leaked in any way.
Yeah.
The validity, I'm sure there is some validity of this. This does feel a little bit like an empty threat, right? Of course, if something got out with Ohtani and they outlined the entire, like, remember when they tried to get Steve Nash here and we knew exactly what the video presentation was like? They were like, and then they did this.
Like, it came out, it's like, Ohtani is, you know, he told some personal piece of information that gets leaked out.
I think that there would be a point, but the idea that if it got out and he was in a city, right, and they were offering the most money, he thought he was going to win a World Series there, and he's like, nah, you know what?
You blew it!
Yeah, you're done. But it made me think about how people blame the media in this city for a lot of things and how I disagree as a member of that side. I respectfully disagree. Uh-huh. Also, it's a complete lack of perspective thing. Like, go listen to stuff from other places anyway. Like, Baltimore suspended their play-by-play guy because he was like, hey, they lost to this team one time. They're like, oh, you're fired, basically.
Kevin Brown, but not that Kevin Brown.
Yeah, but do you think this makes it less fun for us? Because okay, let's say
experiment for
that's what I was going to say. Like, let's say you got the scoop.
Okay, I love this.
Let's say you got the Ohtani scoop.
Because this reminds me of the end of like Gone Baby Gone. Is it like, you know, your principles as, you know, a journalist, you have to report the truth. But what if?
Yeah.
Like, What if?
But that's what I'm saying. But this is for all of us now. Mm-hmm. Because let's say mm-hmm. you, it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Would you, as a fan, would you want to know? Like, no, right? You have to just seal it in the box.
I would. I've never broken a scoop before in my life. I've had, like, I get my inside information the same way you do. Talk to the actual insiders, and some of them aren't active in the media. So
don't compare,
like,
yourself to me, but yeah.
So
my,
like,
mine's a little better than yours.
I disagree, okay. But I've never broken a scoop.
Yeah,
and that would be the scoop to end all scoops. But it also would be like the scoop to end all scoops. Like you're excommunicated from the Toronto community if, in fact, it was proven that that was you were like the Canadian Tire guy who kept Steven Stamkos from signing with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like,
yeah.
there's a reason why we haven't found that, or we don't remember that guy's name.
Because like,
he changed his name.
I was like, what, that
he
guy went
changed
missing?
His name. He, yeah, I think, yeah. Wasn't he, didn't he depart Canadian Tire shortly thereafter? But
I have honestly no idea.
Exactly.
But yes,
that's exactly
was,
the way he
was,
wants it to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, your career might be over still. The tempting. I can't keep my mouth shut. Like, if I had something like that, and yeah, you could make the arguments like, I'm just doing my journalistic responsibility here. I'm letting it rip here.
Yeah, the thing is, though, is if he didn't sign in Toronto after
you
reported
you're
it.
The biggest villain of
no,
all
no, no,
time.
No, no, no. You got to move.
Yes.
You know, like.
Or change your name.
Did you read the Shea Gilgeous-Alexander house story? It's terrifying.
No.
So Shea Gilgeous-Alexander bought this mansion on Lake Ontario. And.
In Oakville? I bet.
He moves into this house.
He's from Hamilton, though.
He moves into this house last summer. And then day two, he's in the house. And there's just some guy on his lawn going, have you seen Sam? And the guy's like, what? Police. Police. He's like, I want my money. I'm not leaving. There was a guy called the Crypto King that lived in his house before him. And he ran some humongous scam and scammed, obviously, millions of dollars out of people and then declared bankruptcy, one of those moves, right?
Uh-huh.
And Shea was not told that that guy owned that house. So what happened is Alexander is now suing, or he's trying to get the sale voided, essentially. I don't know how that actually works. I don't know if it's like a lawsuit.
People keep showing up?
Yeah, because this happens all the time. This isn't a thing. Like, people just show up like it's a zombie. People, you know, they've lost all their money. They're looking for the guy that did this. They're Tim Robinson pointing. We're all trying to find the guy who did this. That's it. And they know who did it. It's the guy,
themselves.
The Crypto King.
Yeah.
No, but it's also the Crypto King.
Yeah.
So he wants out of the house, and I think he only spent 2 days there before he and his girl left.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be you. If you broke Shohei news, if you were like Shohei, and even if it wasn't you, even if it was like you actually thought you had it, but then Shohei changed his mind and you reported it and then he didn't come. Like there's different stakes now in terms of the fan base and the vitriol. Because
you're right. Even if you weren't directly responsible for him not signing, everybody's going to assume that that was the reason because of this passing report, right?
Yes.
You're on blast.
That's it.
Like you have to
be. He put the warning. It's a salvo. He fired a bullet in the air and he said, hey, nobody say anything.
Buddy,
of me.
It's not even just Toronto media. Like what if passing reports and it's only he's had like the most direct reporting on this and nobody knows. That's the thing. I talking to Morosi, like all these guys don't really know.
Bowden's been on and he did mention he's been pretty plugged in with his camp. Like he's one of their dudes.
Kudos to him.
I put a little sprinkle on the Rangers before or right after.
Maybe. But yeah, I mean, even if it's a national guy who blows the top off this thing and then Shohei, like say Passan today is like, Blue Jays met with Shohei Ohtani. It went really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like things are looking really good. Here are the things that Shohei wants. Here's when he expects to pitch again. And Shohei Ohtani doesn't sign in Toronto. Like how, I mean,
it would be different.
How,
I think
how
would
are
be
those
different.
Jeff Passan hits well, with Blair and Barker looking?
Yeah. Yeah. He'd be public enemy number one for a long time. I don't think people would forget that. You know what's weird about the Ohtani thing though? And this was kind of a secondary thing with you. I can't remember a story that felt like a sports story that felt this big. And it would probably be different if he was still able to pitch next year, right? Like if there was the idea that, hey, but, you know, you sign Ohtani and automatically you're one of the biggest baseball teams on the planet, especially if you're like in the East Coast, right?
Yeah.
It's like you're going to get a TV deal from Japan. I didn't know this. I learned this yesterday, actually, because I was asking questions. Shai told me, is that the merch you sell in your stadium, you get?
Yes.
The merch that's sold like through the websites is the ones that go
to the revenue. Oh, I assumed you got all of it.
No. So, but still, like your ability to sell Ohtani stuff in the stadium and like, it's a huge boon for the team if they end up getting him. And if he does, he's an automatic, like every fan in every market basically shows up to see the guy play, right?
Yeah.
If you're a halfway reasonable sports fan.
And
it's
also, it kind of insulates you as a front office too from like, you don't want to be the Angels where you miss the playoffs, but like winning isn't secondary,
but if you got Shohei, it's kind of...
Well, how can you argue with whatever moves transpire this offseason outside of that and however many games they win?
That's a great point. If you land Shohei Ohtani, that's as close of a thing as you could get to a World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, it's not,
other than winning a World Series.
That's what I just meant. Like, yeah. So winning a World Series, number one, mm-hmm. but would you rather lose the World Series or have Shohei Ohtani? I think that answer is pretty obvious.
Well, I mean, if you lose a World Series, so hold on, but your contention is that, like, you go into the season knowing you're not going to win the World Series. But like,
No. I'm saying, would you just the two things?
Because getting to a World Series, that's the best thing ever, because then you're just like, oh my God, what a thrill ride, and you believe that you can win it. But if
Jays went to ALCS and it was the most thrilling thing, so that's great. No, but then it's heartbreaking.
Yes.
But getting Ohtani is pure bliss. That's what I'm saying, is you win the World Series, that's number one, but getting the top free agent and got, when's the last time we've had a guy like this?
Well, again, George Springer was the top of that free agent class.
No. I don't mean the Blue Jays. I just mean in terms of like a player that drove this level of interest that was a free agent who was in his prime.
It's never happened. But, I mean, John Tavares.
No, I was not even talking Toronto. I'm talking about like internationally, just, you know, or the caliber for a sport where you would automatically go like, holy crap.
Somebody that, is going to show up on a rundown of PTI.
Yeah, yeah.
That's never happened.
To close that point, though, what I was trying to say is the Ohtani thing feels weird to me, because I think if you're a baseball fan, it's all you can talk about. And especially since for the Blue Jays right now, there's this whole like they're a dark horse thing. And so it's fun to dream on what they would actually do with Ohtani, right? Mm-hmm. And how the team would work and what would change, blah, 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 right? It's a fun thought exercise as a fan. Especially because you get to be like, there's no real pressure because no one thinks he's actually coming here. Mm-hmm. But there's at least enough of sprinkles that say it's not a 0%. Mm-hmm. We're not Baltimore, mm-hmm. right? It's not, hey, they're not even trying. They're not even trying to sit down.
City, which you said, you know, that's the only thing that would be more likely than the Blue Jays signing Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, I agree. Man, if they signed Shohei Ohtani, it'd be the most shocking thing in my life. Although I will, like I've said this many times, but when people put together, I had a buddy who put together like the exact trade, essentially. My buddy John Clark, he put together the Kawhi trade. The second the Kawhi rumors started happening, he was like, DeRozan, Pirtle, and a first. And I laughed at him. I was like, mm-hmm. this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Did you ask him whether they're going to land Shohei Ohtani?
I should, actually. Really should.
What is the Juan Soto trade?
Yeah, the Juan Soto trade I've already outlined. It's the simplest thing ever.
Vlad?
Well, or...
The thing is, Vlad makes too much money. Like, Vlad makes the same amount of money. Yeah, I mean, if the Padres are like, sure, Alec Manoah coming off his ERA of 6 season, not knowing if he'll ever be an effective major leaguer again, is the centerpiece of a Juan Soto trade. That sounds great to us. Then, okay, but like, why on earth would the Padres do it? Yeah,
because they're looking at it and saying, we get 4 years of control of a guy who might be a Cy Young winner.
Yeah, but he also, like, literally, so this was the report the other day from Ken Rosenthal that the Blue Jays are they're open to trading Alec Manoah. Alec Manoah might be able to bounce back
by the way, like, Robert Murray, who's coming on the show tomorrow, had that first.
Okay, yeah. Kudos to Robert Murray, who also reported the Blue Jays are going to do something big. He's here in Las Vegas. Big. Which is
everybody's here and think it's a bloody big deal.
Yeah, it is. It's a big deal. But yeah, if you're in the market for Alec Manoah, sure, you believe that there's a percentage chance he can return to being a top 10 Cy Young award candidate, which he was the first 2 years. Mm-hmm. But you're also like of the not 0% belief that his career might be over. Like that's the difference between trading Alec Manoah and trading Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It's like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to be in the major leagues for another 10-15 years. Like there's no question about that. Mm-hmm. Whether he's going to live up to the hype or the levels that he set in 2021, different deal. It's quite possible Alec Manoah is never again an effective. You should look at Major League Baseball history. You should look at the way he looked. And at a couple of different points during the course of the season, even after being sent down to the minor leagues and coming back up, and he's like, and also look at the way he was able to be effective his first 2 years when he was super effective. It was like, oh, well, this guy doesn't throw upper 90s. Yeah. He doesn't strike out a ton of people. He walks a lot of guys and he hits a bunch of guys, but gosh darn it, if he doesn't get people out, which is like, okay, he did it for a couple of years. The idea that might just all of a sudden disappear, not out of the realm of possibility.
So... I think that I outlined this case on yesterday's show or Monday's show, that it's a really impossible needle to thread, because he's got the 4 years of control. If you look at the Blue Jays starting rotation, it's a lot of old guys. Like, really, Barrios is under contract for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But Kikuchi's 1 year, and the idea that he's just, like, the fourth starter now, and that's great.
To me, Kikuchi might be the guy that you're looking at trading in the final year of his deal, maybe trading at the high point of his value.
Hey, but again, I don't know what the high point of the value is. Either way, it's like Chris Bassett's going to be 35 or 36, and he just threw the most innings of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Which is whatever. Like, I don't know. I'm not. I think you'll be fine. But
that was the Blue Jays World Series, by the way. Chris Bassett getting to 200 innings. Like, that was.
Yeah, that was their. That was actually their big win of the season. What else was better than that?
Well, Davis Schneider with his Fenway Park.
Yeah. Well, that was the greatest moment of the season. That was the funnest series of the season. Mm-hmm. And the best part of it is that's the series that I paid the least attention to because they were so dreadful right before that. I needed a break.
That was right after the Rangers series, wasn't it?
But. It just, if you look at the rotation, the whole premise of the team, having the dueling aces thing, and maybe Barrios is back to kind of being that guy. I do believe that the playoff thing really mattered, but it's just the pitching depth isn't great. The idea that all of a sudden you're going to be relying on Ricky Tiedemann, who can't stay healthy for 35 minutes in a row, and Bowden Francis, who is, looks fine, but I'm not.
No.
Yeah,
it's just a guy. Yeah, but you need those guys, but yeah, he's just a guy.
Here's what I will say about Manoah. I would back the guy who... Everything about him is baseball. He doesn't, you know, it's baseball and family. Like, he's not out here trying to be like an entrepreneur and other things. There's no outside commitment to anything other than being an awesome baseball player. And like I said, he looks like a guy who's breaking up with the team because he's in the gym every single day. And it's like, that's a breakup move, is when you have heartbreak. You just want to show the other person like you screwed up. I would back the guy who has that mentality, who has that track record of success all the way through, like, high school, college, the major league level, where we were like, oh, no one's had a start like this other than Dave Steeb. I just think that dude will bounce back. I do. Maybe he's not going to ever be what we thought. Maybe he's not going to be a top three guy, but I think that the likelihood that he's, like, not pitching in the major leagues
is crazy. I wouldn't say it's more than 50%.
No.
But, you know, you have to be open to the possibility, like, injuries, a separate deal. Like, obviously, yeah, Vlad could suffer some horrific injury changes. No, but I'm just saying, like, just from a pure performance perspective, you have to be open to the possibility that it never again happens for Alek Manoah. That's why, like, the pitching thing, though, is interesting because Ben Nicholson-Smith's tweet from a couple of days ago kind of went under the radar when he said early this winter, the Blue Jays showing real interest in some big names, including top free agent pitchers. Per sources, bats still Jay's priority, but they're keeping possibilities open, active in the trade market too, right? Like, we obviously, the need for this team is offense. When you score one run in two postseason games against the Minnesota Twins, and you only win 89 games despite that incredible pitching staff, it's obviously offense. But if you're unable to, like, look at the free agent bats available, there's Shohei, and it's like Cody Bellinger, and then it's like Matt Chapman. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to sell themselves on Matt Chapman, who for 5 of the 6 months the season was dreadful. If you can't do that, maybe the best avenue is for you to go shop in the very tippy top of the free agent pitching market, where there's, like, the reigning National League Cy Young Award winner right there.
Blake Snell, who knows the
division as well.
You know what the other one is that I really love, but it's not going to happen, is, and this is part of what complicates the Manoah thing. There's a bunch of pitchers that you can trade for right now. Like, you could trade for Corbin Burns.
Mm-hmm.
You could trade for Tyler Glasnow.
Mm-hmm.
You could trade for Shane Bieber.
Mm-hmm.
All of these guys are available through trade.
Yep.
And so that makes it even harder to trade Manoah, because you go, well, if teams are looking for starting pitching help and they're willing to give up, like, actual assets, why would they go with the thing that has any question marks versus those three guys that have just, you know, that they're bona fide all the way through?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're the Blue Jays, I wondered, okay, that's the one for me with the Glasnow Manoah. Is, could you, if the Rays liked Manoah,
oh my God,
could you do the in division, just they take your guy, they get the cheapie,
how terrifying
they get the four,
would that be?
It would be the scariest thing of all time. Especially since Tyler Glasnow, you know, the second he shows up and draws, his arm is going to explode into smithereens.
It's tough for the always injured guy to have Glass in his name.
Yeah, but when he's on, though.
Yeah.
And except again, for, you know, like, what sucks is that he can't pitch against the Blue Jays. And he doesn't get those times where he gets to feast on the Toronto Blue Jays.
Of course, like,
meek lineup down in Tampa.
God. Yeah. The Rays are waiting for, like, Alek Manoah to be DFA'd 1 year. If it's not this year, next year, and they can scoop him up and then turn him into the Alec Manoah of his first 2 years in the major
leagues. Alec Manoah written off by many like Ben Ennis after basically a few bad starts, came back from the Florida Complex League and actually pitched all right and had one bad start, and then they were like, get out of town.
But to the point about Tyler Glasnow, throws 100, right? Yeah. Like, Tyler Glasnow makes sense, right? Yeah. That's a huge point. Like, okay, yeah, when he's healthy, oh, the guy that throws a million misses all the bats in the world. Yeah, I get why he's successful, and if he's healthy, he's going to be successful. It's just never been the case with Alec Manoah, but that is an interesting thought experiment. It's never going to happen. Dude, like that you can't do that if you're either team.
No, but so I'm terrified of trading Manoah. I believe that he's going to be good again. I buy the theory that Gausman had of, hey, this guy actually pitched a ton of innings, and then they had the pitch clock, and he was out of sync, and he lost it, and he couldn't find it, and during the baseball season trying to find it, it's impossible that ultimately he comes back, he's in better shape, he gets his mechanics down, he's an absolute gamer, and he turns out to be a top three guy.
Maybe even likely.
Yeah, but if you were a team like the Brewers, you know, or a team, the reason why the Padres thing makes sense to me is that you're getting a cheap, controllable guy that has some upside. And if you're trying to shed money, that's the one that makes sense. But I just thought, like, the Corbin Burns type of trades.
Yeah, I would trade Alec Manoah for 1 year of Corbin
Burns. But
that's
what I'm saying is I feel like that might be their best avenue with Manoah, is that
if that's the return you can get on Alec Manoah, and, and my thinking, then my thinking on crazy. This is entirely wrong, right? Because the way I view it, and I think other teams are going to view it as, Alec Manoah, we saw him do it for sure.
But would you rather have a prospect?
With not 99. But if you're the Brewers, of course.
Yeah, like would you rather have guy who's...
If I'm the Brewers, I'd rather have Ricky Tiedemann than Alec Manoah.
Yeah, duh, but they're not getting Ricky Tiedemann for a year. Like, that's not even that's a laughable thing. That's like a Daryl Morey thing where he's like, we want your whole
team. But those are
two
extremes, right? Like, Alec Manoah, again, he's shown it in the major leagues, and maybe injuries were a part of it, but also, like, maybe not. Like, there's a lot of unknowns about what happened this season. And again, like, there's nothing tangible to point to other than, like, he had great extension. That's the thing he's always done really well. He's had really extended down the mound. The other things
are... That to me.
The other things are like, he looks like a bulldog. Remember how many conversations we had about going into his first postseason start? He looks like he's made for the postseason. Stubbed his toe, opening game of the season, stubbed his toe, home opener, stubbed his toe. Like, yeah, there's nothing you can point to like Tyler Glasnow, who throws 100 with Alec Manoah. He's a great slider, and that was diminished last year.
You keep getting off track with this, though. It's just like,
I don't believe that the Brewers would value him enough to make him the centerpiece of a Corbin Burns deal. I think people think that the possibility exists that he might be done. Now, it's not like more than 50%, but it's a non-zero possibility.
Here's what I'll say. If you're trading for any baseball prospect, it's a small chance that they even become like a passable baseball player
that's
in major leagues.
Trading for more generally.
But I don't think that a guy... I don't know what the value is on these players that have one-year deals or what the value is. I think the big X factor in a lot of this offseason, and for the Blue Jays especially, is how much are the Padres going to try to get off of some of this money? Mm-hmm. And what is the value of trading guys to teams that are willing to eat a ton of the cash?
Yeah.
Like, the Mariners gave up the best closer in baseball so that they could get off a little bit of the Robinson Cano money to the Mets.
Yeah.
They said, here, just have them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just feel as though if you were a team and you were trying to sell something to your fan base and you're trying to get rid of money, Manoah's kind of one of the perfect pieces. You don't have to pay him right away. He's a lottery ticket, but so is every single other prospect. And then you also get the 4 years of control, you get off the money, but you also can publicly state, hey, this might actually help us win tomorrow. This might actually be a more impactful trade for us this year than those players. And I don't think it's going to be that way. I think that's going to take Manoah a little bit of time to get back to where he was. But either way, I do think that if we're doing all the like curious things about the Blue Jays offseason, right? Obviously, the Ohtani possibility is number one by a mile. But to me, secondarily, the sneaky biggest one is not would they trade Vlad. It's what is Manoah's trade value actually? Like, what is
If I'm wrong and he is valued.
Well, you're wrong a lot. So this is actually making me feel good because I can't remember too many times where you were right.
If I'm wrong, then if you can trade Alec Manoah, because I do believe, like, I'm the guy that has Alec Manoah and I'm like, man, if I got Alec Manoah and I hold all the cards, right? Even if Alec Manoah doesn't want to be here and he's, you're right, like doing the breakup thing in the gym because he's, he wants to look good for his next partner.
Yeah.
That's all well and good. Doesn't matter. He's under team control.
Do you want to see a picture of shredded Alec Manoah in a Padres uniform being like, good to be somewhere where I feel wanted, #blessed? No.
sure, I don't, but I'm not going to hand, yeah, like, and to that point, I'm not going to hand him away for nothing. That's and I don't think if I'm, and I'm the Padres, he's part of a Juan Soto package, despite the fact that it makes more sense monetarily than the Vlad trade.
I want to see what the other packages are for some of these guys that actually have a piece that's better or has higher upside than Manoah or more of a track record. It just, to me, it's a really interesting one. But hold on, I got to do one more baseball thing with you before we take the break.
Okay, can I just make one last point on this?
Yeah.
Is that like, yeah, Ricky Tiedemann is more valuable than Alek Manoah, partly because he's younger and under more team control and has the sure. higher velocity fastball, and he's left-handed, but also because he's never failed, right? Like, Alek Manoah has the proof of concept with the success, but he's also had the proof of concept of, like, him failing.
Like, except for Ricky Tiedemann, like I said, is hurt every single time. People are
sure,
like...
Sure, but so is Tyler Glass now, but it doesn't matter. Like, if you have the upside, like, if when you're healthy, you're dominant, you get to be Justin Verlander, you get to be Tyler Glass now.
Here's what I would say. If I was a front office and I was trading for one of the two guys... and I was looking at the price points of what they were, I would be at the front of the line trying to get Alek Manoah. Mm-hmm. I would be at the front of the line going, what do we got to give up? Okay, let's find something. Like, buy low, obviously. I wouldn't mm-hmm. be just trying to give over everything that I have to get him. But I would certainly, that's the type of trade to me that
sure.
really works out for a
that's
team.
That's why you're not selling, though, because you're not selling low on a guy that you control.
But this is the thing. We keep talking about the Blue Jays are going to do something big, right? Mm-hmm. And go, okay, well.
If it's not Ohtani, what is it?
If it's not Ohtani, is it Bellinger? Okay, does that really feel that big? Like, if the Blue Jays have Bellinger,
and
does it feel that big?
I'm dubious of Bellinger.
Okay, so then you go down, and then everybody keeps saying that they're not trading Vladimir Bo. Mm-hmm. So I go, all right. I'm sure that they really want to re-sign Bo and that they want to give him a contract extension and they're going to try to get that done because, yeah, he's just the guy that you can bet on long-term. I've always said if you're not going to re-sign Vladdy to a long-term contract, I would deal him now rather than letting him go into mm-hmm. the last year of his contract.
Yep.
And I would try to get at maximum value in terms of win now, do whatever. But it just there's not a lot of other moves that you can
it's
look
signing
at.
Signing Blake Snell, it's signing Sonny Gray, it's signing Josh Hader.
Yeah, but, that's the thing. If they sign Sonny Gray, I'm not going to be like... Oh, yes. They signed the guy who's going to eat up some innings and be really good in the regular
also
season and I don't feel great about in the postseason.
Middling results in this division.
Yeah,
too.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I got no excitement for Sonny Gray signing. I'm sorry. That's a baseball writer guy where he's going to give them a ton of stories on the ways that he attacks pitchers and the research he puts in, right? Like, Arden would be so stoked on the Sonny Gray signing because he's going to get, like, five articles out of that.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I'm a baseball fan. I don't really care. Anyway,
an ERA of 4.9 as last 4.8.
Yeah, not interested in Sonny.
The AL East,
not interested
the
in Sonny Gray at all. My last thing for you, baseball wise, because I do want to hit the break, and I got one other topic for you. Mm-hmm. What do you do with Danny Jansen?
You give him the reins to be the 1A catcher to Alejandro Kirk's 1B next season, and then you know you try and hammer out an extension.
Yeah, but this is the thing. If they're stuck between a rock and a hard place with him because he's also an injury-prone guy. Mm-hmm. He's also starting to get up there in age, but he's a UFA after next year. Mm-hmm. And I know that we should just be kind of focusing on this offseason, but it did make me think about how the added irony of the Moreno trade is that the Jays could actually be in a position where it would be smart for them to add a catcher because if they leave that business to next year where there's zero catchers in free agency outside mm-hmm. of... Like, if you're Danny Jansen, there's no incentive for you to sign now either. Like, unless the Blue Jays are going to, you know, blow your doors off.
Well, this is it. This is why, yeah, the extensions for Bo and Vlad become less and less likely the closer we get to free agency. We're mm-hmm. like, oh, we'll just play it out anyways, right? Like, and we can boost our value. I think what happens if you lose Danny Jansen and Alejandro Kirk is not the all-star Alejandro Kirk from a year
but
ago...
But even if he is...
Well, but if he is, then you just backfill it with like a Luke Maley type guy, right? Like then you just get a defense first catcher, which are falling off trees. You can go out and get him.
All right.
And you just become one of the like other whatever, I was going to say 20, but more probably like 15, 10 to 15 teams in Major League Baseball that don't get offense out of that position. And you do lean hard into the defensive side of things, but that was part of what made this team so intriguing going into this past season was that it's the position with the bar the lowest at mm-hmm. catching position, and it was a position of actual strength offensively for this Blue Jays team to this yeah. point at which both guys were DHs. Danny Jansen was a DH in the playoffs in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
So if he has to depart and you can't sign him to what he's worth, and there's reasons why you might not believe he's going to be worth the money, and the injuries is the most notable thing, then I think you just become one of those other teams in baseball that pin your hopes on getting a good game caller and a guy that blocks balls behind the play.
Hooray. That's great. That's really
well,
great.
I think this team could be headed for a big, if they don't sign Ohtani, if they don't go nuts in the free agent market with the pitcher, and they don't win again this year, and they're not signing Bo and Vlad to an extension, like in 2 years, we're looking at, I don't know if it's like a 100-loss team, but like clearly a change in direction here.
Yeah, but I don't think
like Kevin Gausman's going to be staring down the end of his deal too. Like everybody's contract is pretty much done in 2027.
Yeah. Everything all of a sudden, it really does. It feels so dire with all their guys. Mm-hmm. But there's so few dudes where you feel like, well, you got to just get him under a contract extension. Like the only guy that I think the approval rating would be 100% would be Bo.
Yep. Like, and it's, I mean, he's been Mr. Consistency, but it's not like he's a guarantee considering his offensive profile and the position.
Sure, but if Vladdy got a contract extension tomorrow, there would be fans going, why did you do this?
Unless it's for $25 million over 10. Like, say he signed a 10-year, $250 million deal.
He's not going to do that.
Yeah.
I just think for Danny Jansen, he has to be watching the Matt Chapman thing closely going, how much can I get because of a market that is just completely void?
Well, and especially considering, the thing that most teams in baseball, including the Padres, including the Braves, and it's, they've won a World Series doing it. Like, these guys don't generally reach free agency, and Juan Soto is going to be the notable example, and that's why he's going to get what he's about to get paid. He's only 25 years old.
I think I would try to give Danny Jansen the money now, even though he does always get hurt, and then I would roll the dice on the injury. Unless your medical staff is telling you, like, you absolutely can't, I would try to do it now, and then I would just make sure that I have two catchers next year, and then, like, yeah, someone can trade for him at least if you look at that depressed catcher market. If you do hit on one of these guys, try to move somebody.
But we already saw, like, everybody in this city was ready. Danny Jansen was the one of the three that everyone was like, cast him overboard, despite the fact that, like, he'd shown.
No, he's the man. I love Danny Jansen. But the thing is
they couldn't get a return. They couldn't get Dalton Varsho for Danny Jansen.
Dude, that's my point here is just this. So far this offseason, and I know next year is different with free agents, but so far this offseason, everyone seems to be wanting to trade for control. Mm-hmm. They don't want to go crazy and say, we'll make a big splash, we'll make a big acquisition. But there is going to be one team that will pay Danny Jansen a ton of money because they're going to get desperate at their catcher spot, and he'll be available, and then it's going to force the Blue Jays' hand, and then maybe he leaves. I would rather have a catcher under contract that if you go into next offseason and things don't work out for you, you do need to make a shift, that at least now he's an asset to you rather than the Chapman thing where you're going, well, if we don't pay him, we're playing Addison Barger as of tomorrow and Kevin Biggio. But if we do pay him, it's going to be the worst contract that we have on the books.
It just feels like this team's keeping its powder dry for 2026, where it's like, okay, you got George Springer, Kevin Gausman in the final years of their deal, and Jose Barrios is the only guy locked up through 2028. But, like, literally, Jose Barrios is the Will Smith meme, like, in the empty house in 2026. He's the only guy under contract.
Anyways,
the next 2 years.
To wrap this up, I'm still going to ask Robert Murray about what he thinks the chances are for Ohtani in Toronto.
Okay. He could be persona non grata if he has anything definitive about it.
I'll warn him, though. Remember when I told you about the what's it called? The basilisk?
I don't know.
It's the paradox or whatever the hell it is. It's like...
sound really smart.
No, I know. Well, there's this...
No, go ahead. Say the smart thing.
There's this...
Oh, I listened to a podcast.
All right, never mind. I'm done. It's called Rocco's Basilisk. Remember when I told you about that?
Yeah, that's for sure. Do you remember when you told me about it?
Yeah, but that's essentially what it'll be doing to Robert Murray, where I'm like, hey, this is very dangerous for you.
Yeah.
But here's a warning before we discuss
but
this
once
any
you open
further.
It, it's
kind
of Pandora's box, more accessible reference you could have used.
Yeah, hey, really, really unlikely that this happens, but there is a danger that could be, it's potentially there. All right, there's a real potential. Anyways, let's take a quick break. All right. I saved the best for last.
I thought we already did pretty well.
I don't know. It's pretty good until you started making fun of me at the end of the segment.
That felt so good. That was the best part. And you had to eat it. And you did a good job of eating it.
Yeah. But I did remember what it was. Anyway.
whatever.
Why do we love sports media beef so much?
Well, us, it's hard to
because it's not a success. Like, I was looking at this just on Twitter, just the reaction, right? And everybody knows. Like, it's just the
what
amount.
What we're talking about?
Yeah. I'm not picking sides or saying this weird thing. It's just, I don't care about it. I just mean, in general, there just seems to be something about Is it just like a normal thing where you see a fight, like you're a kid and you're going up and you see two people fighting in the schoolyard and you want to circle around?
But,
but
people with megaphones, right? So like people, like you're in media. So yeah, obviously you have access to the loudest voice, right? Like you either have a column or you have television spot. Yeah, I think notable people. We love celebrities fighting, right? And sports media is not celebrities.
I mean.
Like it's a smaller. Yeah, people, you know, there's Schadenfreude. There's a Schadenfreude to it too. Like somebody's miserable here. Yeah, I and it's hard for me to separate myself from being a member of the media because I've been that way my entire adult life.
Yeah.
Well, I literally have not had another job since I've been an adult, right?
Yeah, like which is crazy.
Yeah, I that's all I know. So like obviously I'm interested.
Really set,
I know
you really
the
set
people
your life in stone at 18, eh? You're like, I'm marrying my high school sweetheart and I'm taking my first job and I'm running out of my career.
Yeah.
You're like
great.
like an old
I hate making
guy.
Decisions. So I made the big decisions and I was like, let's keep it between the lines here.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. It's worked out. I can't argue with the results.
No, the results
are
great.
Professionally, it landed me here, so
it's all right. Yeah, you met me.
Yeah, it's hard to make the positive argument. But so from a purely my perspective, I know the people and I do pick sides and I'm like,
you pick
this
sides? Say the side you're on. No,
well, should we tell people exactly what you're talking about?
Just, everybody knows. It's like, there was just like some people in sports media that started beefing on the internet. And like, I find all of this stuff like lose for everyone involved because it's just like, I don't know why you would ever want
to
go take something to the internet.
When people do that.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. Like, I get very tempted. Emotional, too. Yeah. Like, and I get not, like, listen, I get angry. I want to yell at people in real life. Sometimes I do. Not on the internet when, like, I'm of the understanding. And, like, I'm impacted by the things you write to me. But guess what? Like, I know that you're an internet person.
Yeah.
So I can't respond to that. And I just shut it out of my life. I'm used.
Here's the thing.
I don't respond. I used to maybe occasionally. But, you know, it's just, it's too emotionally taxing to do that.
If both of our careers... You know how there was like the you'd have a girl in high school. You're like, if both of us are single when we're 40, we're going to get married. If our careers start to careen.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be ripping everybody.
No. You and I. Like, we should just go after each other. I'm not going after other people. They got way better receipts.
Oh, you mean to like build it and like, did these guys have a falling out? What's happening
here? That's what I'm saying.
I love that. Yeah. Man, what happened to the radio work? Like, I...
No, well, that's our thing this for now. So whoever's listening to this, you got in the ground floor, you'll be in the know. But,
I wish we could punch
But also, here's the thing, though. This is the downside for the people that are in the know. It means things are really going poorly for us.
Like, well, I mean, the other side of... Do you... I wish we could still do the radio beefs. You're not even allowed in a joking manner to do that. But can we have a beef with your show, the Fan Morning Show and J.D. Bunkus podcast? Like,
yeah. Sure. Except for what I'll do is I'll big time you and I'll be like, what show?
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. We can't start it. It's punching down for us, right? So it has to be you.
Well, I disagree. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying the opposite is true.
Okay, it feels like the beef is off to a nice start.
Yeah,
actually.
It is. Actually, it's really, hey, this wouldn't be so hard to do. It turns out. Maybe we're not
gonna, it's right below the surface.
The funny thing about this would be, we'd be like, all right, let's concoct the beef. Like, let's start putting the fake stuff out there. And then.
It'd be like a little morsel just, of truth. And
no,
it would
it's
easily.
Just immediately, it became, it's like, that's actually the falling. I was like, start us a bit.
It's again like I forget what the example was we were talking about.
Oh,
the
other you
day,
forgot
the wrestling.
Oh, do
yeah,
what you
the
did.
Wrestling. Yeah. Yeah, where like you play wrestle with somebody, and then all of a sudden somebody gets it like a little bit more real, and then it just escalates until eventually it's a couple of guys squaring off and
fighting.
Punching each other in the face.
Yeah. Basically, what my life was before it was conclusive that my brother could kick my ass. It was like every Christmas after a couple drinks,
let's testing him.
Yeah. And then it got to the age where it's like people's shoulders are getting thrown out and it's like, all right, this is done. So that's to wrap up. So now I think it's the worst because he's bigger. And it's just, these fights always get way too far. So now I just have to submit like a loser where I'm like, I'm Carl Anthony Towns tapping.
I would pay to
Rudy
see
Gobert.
That.
No.
Oh, I had a friend, the brother friends. And the stronger one used to do what he called making his brother dance, where he would grab his arms, his hands, and twist them up, like do like a mercy thing over his head where he would have to move his legs and make it. There's nothing.
That's great. That's really good.
That's what I'm going to tell your brother that he should do that to you the next time he sees you, because height is a big part of it. He does have height on you.
He could. Again, I'm old and
washed. Oh my god.
So, yeah.
And I will put that behind a paywall, and people will have to pay me $100.
That's a good
per
start
view.
For the sports media beef. Look at this guy, dancing loser. All right, I'll let you go. Go enjoy your sleep that you need so badly that makes you avoid the Christmas party. Anyway,
thank you.
Quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk to the man in Europe, Luke Fox. Listen, I'm extremely grateful that my next guest is on. But when I originally asked my producer to book him, it was because I was like, oh yeah, he's coming back. He'll be on the flight. So don't ask him for Monday because he'll be traveling back to North America and then he'll be getting back onto whatever 6 time zones difference is from Sweden. I don't know what the time is there. But I was like, yeah. Like, get him. He'd be great. I want stories. I got a ton of topics for him, right? Like, you guys saw the doc. I wrote down like a million things I want to talk to Luke specifically about, to the point where it's probably too many. And then I find out this guy's like, hopefully taking drugs, looking at northern lights and fjords. He's in Copenhagen and he's like, he texts the producer. He's like, yeah, I don't want to come on. I don't have a reception. I'm like, don't come on. Why are you doing this? Go live your life. You could do this any other day. I appreciate it. I'm thrilled. But you could have, like, what are you doing? What are you doing that you're doing this? Like, this is outrageous behavior from you. Are you addicted to, this is a problem. This is actually not a radio interview. This is an intervention. Like, go have fun.
I should be having fun. I have been having fun,
good,
to be honest. But you know what it is? The reason why I'm over in Europe in the first place is because I cover the Leafs.
Fair.
So if someone wants to call and talk about Leafs, I should probably take 15 minutes out of my day.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yesterday was, I went with moved to Norway.
Okay.
And I was already in Sweden, and my buddy's lived here for 5 or 6 years. He's like a childhood friend. He's been begging me to come visit him. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll get to Norway sometime. But I was already in Scandinavia for the first time in my life, so I thought this was a pretty good excuse to finally see where he lives. And he lives in the northernmost city of Norway called Tromsø. And it's in the Arctic Circle. I know you're familiar with
Lights
that far north. Yeah. So I went ice fishing.
Had you done it before?
On a fjord.
Yeah.
I've never done it.
That's awesome.
Not on a fjord. And we caught dinner and froze our toes off, but it was a blast.
I love this.
And then the Northern Lights came out while we were standing on the ice, and it was magnificent. It was a very northern experience, especially for my first full day up here.
Buddy, you're going to come back. You're a changed man. You're not going to be the same.
Yeah.
You're going to come back here, you're going to be enlightened. That's just what you just said. How are you supposed to sit in traffic in the GTA after that? Like, I don't know. It's like, that's it's impossible.
A different lifestyle.
Yeah,
they cross country ski everywhere.
Yeah.
That's how they get around. They got these little sleds. People are biking with special tires, even though there's, you know, 5 feet.
Everybody's
of snow.
In shape just, and hot, and it's nice. You know, not a bunch of slobs like us. It's like, sorry, it's a 15-minute walk. I'll just take an Uber. Yeah, don't worry, I'll be there shortly. It's like, yeah, it's off the subway line. I don't think so. I don't think I'll be there. Yeah. No, that's incredible, man. Like, truly, I'm jealous that you guys, if there's anything, you know, the NBA has this, like, they've got this in-season tournament now. They used to have the Summer League, right, where it was, hey, they're going to get rid of some of the Summer League stuff, and they're going to try to make the hub the in-season tournament in Vegas, right? And it's where the NBA writers go when they have a blast. And I know that was the NHL draft for people who cover the NHL. Now they're going to get rid of that, right? It's not going to be the same hub. Maybe places don't send as many people because the centralized draft thing is going to change. I actually thought it would be a really cool thing for the league to just have this international series every single year, but maybe even try to expand it. And, yeah, have a lot of people be able to go over there. And that's like the make good, or that becomes the place where you do start to rub elbows and get a chat with somebody. Is it in a place like this?
It was an incredible experience. It really was.
Yeah.
And I know it's just, you know, it's kind of a bit random. Like, you had 3 Atlantic Division teams, then you had the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah.
But what kind of blew me away is it wasn't just the Swedish people and, you know, the small contingents from the home cities that had people over there, but there were people from Czechia and Germany and Finland, and, you know, David Camp's family flew over, because anyone within Europe, all of a sudden, it's a little bit closer. It's like, it's a 2-hour flight, a 1.5-hour train ride. I'm going to go check out some NHL hockey. So it really feel global. And I thought it was awesome at the after the final game when one of the European reporters asked Austin Matthews, would you be up for another global series? He'd be like, oh, yeah. And he's like, maybe Mexico City.
Yeah.
And I just think, it, you know, I think sometimes we get caught in our bubbles and it's just on to the next American city, on to the next Canadian city. And it is kind of refreshing just to see the sport in kind of a global context. And I'm all for the NHL expanding. It also reminds me that we need more best-on-best international hockey. It's a shame.
Yeah, it is. Dude, it is. It's a tragedy. It's something that it's gotten to the point where I have the same take over and over and over again, and I just keep beating the same drum, and it's so disappointing to me. And you look at how it's affected other sports and how it shaped so many guys that are, you know, our age, so many people that are our age that watched international hockey and have these special moments, like growing up as a kid, obviously having Salt Lake, but then just how massive Vancouver is for so many people. Like, it's like a touchstone moment for so many people that are, you know, millennials, and that we just haven't had that in this country is nuts, and that we've let that dissipate into what it is. It's really, really sad. I loved the international flavor. I loved the feeling of, you know, family and community. And the only thing, I really hope this works, this extends, because I just think regular seasons can get a little dry and get a little boring, and I don't think this has to last forever. But we saw this with, like, the outdoor games, right? When the outdoor games first happened, they were awesome. And now it's kind of like, all right, they overdid it. So I don't want them to just be doing, you know, 8 series a year. Like, this doesn't have to be NFL where they're doing multiple teams and multiple trips and, like, maybe don't ruin it. But I really think that there's something here, and I hope that the league doesn't shy away from it because of the travel and the time zones and whatever ends up falling out of it. Because here's the thing that worried me out of everything, and I want to get into some of the positives with you and, like, some of the stuff from the trip, but I saw this quote, actually I think it was in one of your pieces, from Sheldon Keefe about his takeaway, right, from this thing. And he kind of took the, like, coaching perspective of it, which was, hey, we got to make sure that we get back on schedule, and this is going to be really tough for us, and it was difficult. And then there were some guys that were talking about the sleep and, you know, the not just the shift in time change, but just, like, the darkness and the bright, just the everything that came with it. And my fear is if the Leafs, like, all these teams now almost have pressure to perform fairly well coming back from this, because I feel like if the Leafs suck, especially the media hub of the world, and they get to blame this as, like, hey, bad things happened after this trip, it could actually have a detrimental effect to the future of this thing.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of hated the excuses. On one hand, I want them to be honest. So if they are jet lag, or if they do feel put out by it, and that's how they really feel, then that's fine. Say it. Mm-hmm. But there were a couple instances, and I know the Keith presser that you're talking about, where I thought they could have leaned in a little bit harder, just. Especially, there's 82 regular season games. Like, you play 2 of them overseas. It's such a small percentage. Plus, for the Leafs, they were set up lovely. So they got the Red Wings on the second of a half of a back-to-back and the Wild on a second half of a back-to-back, where the puck drop time was 3 hours early, like less than 24 hours. It was 21 hours later from the previous one. Both those teams went to overtime. Like, it was very, very well set up for the Leafs to get 4 points, which they did. And, I mean, you still have to do it. But I think there could have been a little bit more pumping up how great this was. You know, just especially for William Nylander, it was awesome. Mm-hmm. So after practice one day, he didn't have to do this because there was, like, another exit for the players should they want to use it. And most did. And some had to walk by us and do press, but he wasn't even scheduled to do press that day, but he came out anyway and met with every single member of the minor hockey team, the Swedish minor hockey team that had come to watch practice, and took his time signing every autograph, posing for every selfie, you know, smiling, making these kids happy. And you know, I just think opportunities like that, you got to seize them because they don't come very often. And I just feel like there's so much drag to the regular season, which, to your point about the NBA, they're trying to stop that they're a little bit more embracing.
Yeah.
And a little bit less complaining. Like, you know, they play again until Friday. There will be time to get over the jet lag.
That's it.
And they actually play a 2 p.m. in Chicago, so it's actually closer to to Stockholm time.
Dude, they're playing two games in 12 days, and they got a like all-inclusive luxury trip to Sweden where they got the adulation of a different country and got to play in a cool place and shake things up. And, yeah, I get it. Again, if you're a coach and you're looking to win and you're trying to win in every single margin, that you could find a way where some things bother you. But I just thought, yeah, there was just absolutely no need to open up any kind of door to, hey, this sucks, or any kind of excuse or just anything. Just it should have been praise, praise, praise. Because, yeah, hockey, they've lost the international competition. I know we have the World Championships or whatever, and there's this promise of things coming at some point. I'm like, whatever. It does make you appreciate a little bit that it is an international game, right? Because we get bogged down in the Canadian side of this and the American growth, and there really isn't a lot of exposure to these other countries. And yeah, hockey in Europe is massive, and there are all these countries like, oh yeah, that's their thing too. And I think for the league to try to find a way where they can make it over to some of these places, these real hockey hubs, and basically showcase these places, these people, the culture, the tradition, all with the NHL getting to push its product, I just think it's a huge win, and they got to make sure that they don't lose this, because I really think that there is something here. Okay, so to the Nylander thing, I want to know what your conversations were like, because yes, he is a super duper star over there. It's incredible. It was incredible to watch from the outside. I can only imagine what it was like, you know, being there and actually seeing this guy in his element and then also come through and have these massive moments on the ice. But I think that two things have happened this week. One is everyone is now talking about what a superstar he is and what level of player he is. The second part is, you know, what is the contract going to be and whether it's gone up and all that different stuff. But I also thought, and I didn't see this discussed anywhere, you know, a lot of people in Sweden, they're wearing Leafs jerseys. And maybe it's just a lot of like the Steph Curry thing where you're a fan of the popular player or how this thing operates, and it's a lot of family. But the Leafs do have this connection through history, right, of, hey, it's Salming to Sundin, and now Nylander kind of has the opportunity to grab this. And if you're making the case of the Leafs and you're trying to find a way to be like, hey, do you want to be here, which he does say he wants to be here, I wonder how a trip like this might actually affect him in terms of appreciating being a part of the Maple Leafs brand as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And he went and did like an autograph signing with Matt Sundin, and the two hung out. And he knew Matt a little bit, but I don't think he ever spent any length of time with him. Mm-hmm. So you hope that's a positive effect. But that's the other thing. It's like, I didn't see a lot of Toronto fans from Toronto. Like, I saw a lot of people in Leaf sweaters speaking other languages that made the trip from other places in Europe or right there in Stockholm. And you're absolutely right. This goes all the way to Börje Salming. And it was unbelievable. There were massive posters and billboards of him all over town, because they're just coming out with this docuseries about his life. They timed the premiere to be when all the teams were in town. And Nylander went, and Nick Lidstrom went, and Matt Sundin went, and Daniel Alfredsson. So it was a massive celebration of Swedish legends. And Sundin is huge here. And they did a really good job of nice little touches of, you know, having Sundin drop the puck, having Daniel Alfredsson on the center's bench. And it really brought the whole thing together. I have no worry in my mind William Nylander wants to be a Leaf. I have no worry in my mind that Brad Treliving wants to get it done. It's just a matter of those two sides finding the right number, because he's playing just so phenomenal. And I've been thinking about it, like, do you just kind of bite the bullet a little bit next year, the final year of Tavares, and just say we might have to be a little bit bad, and then hope Tavares takes a discount or you find a suitable replacement? Because letting this guy go as an own rental this year, the way he's playing, it just seems unfathomable.
I don't think that was ever an option. I think it was always this. I just feel that when they couldn't, there was this little window where they could have traded Nylander, right? Like during the initial negotiation, but they had turnover with the front office. And I think the second that Kyle Dubas was gone, that eliminated any chance for that. Because, yeah, Brendan Shanahan made the calls to the players, told them that they were going to, you know, double down again on the core. They're bringing in a new GM, and everyone was like, oh, well, this is the guy that'll trade Nylander, because he said that he wouldn't go through this again with Goodrow. The difference was, you know, Goodrow, like, really ultimately didn't want to be there, and their team was kind of falling apart. These guys are going to have the continuity of the group. He already knows Austin Matthews is going to be there. He knows Morgan Riley is going to be there. To me, the question isn't, like, are they re-signing William Nylander? It's going to be, if this fails, if this falls apart, will they trade Mitch Marner? Like, will they Like, will they, knowing that they had this ahead of time, actually decide to make that move, or will they just decide, hey, we just got to get through 1 year of Tavares and then we'll have all these guys and hopefully Tavares takes a hometown discount? Like, I think that's where we're at with it. The problem is like, yeah, just now some of the money talk around Nylander is it's so high. Like, it's so much that I've seen from some people, and they're like, just give him the money. And I'm like, all right, I understand it. I think that they need to re-sign him. But at this point where, like, I just have to think that the price is up. And I feel like you've already hit the maximum point of this, right? Like, I don't think that he can go up any further. Like, I think that this is it. He's at the peak value. He's already kind of proved it. If I'm the Leafs, I ride this thing out and I get more information, and I'm all knowing that at the end of the day, you're just going to have to pay this guy and extend him to what potentially already what is the, I say worst case scenario from a cap standpoint, which is like an 11-8 kind of deal.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one advantage they have, right? Because the feeling is, he doesn't want to do the Austin Matthews thing where he takes 4 or 5 years. He wants this to be the whopper contract, and he can breathe and relax, not have to go through this again. So the one advantage the Leafs have is they can offer an 8th year. And if he's looking for, you know, a final sum, what the Leafs can do is give him the extra year to hopefully keep the cap hit a little bit lower. And the Leafs, not every team can do what the Leafs can do in terms of signing bonuses and massive amounts of money up front. So it can go right in the bank account and start earning interest. And then you know the fact that he does want to be a Maple Leaf. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, you get some small value. But I'm with you. Like, if you're Brad Free Living, you're probably not picking up the phone right now. He's maximum leverage. He's the king mm-hmm. of hockey right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just, like, I had Mike Kelly on the other day, and we were going over, I basically tried to do the, hey, let's see the underlying numbers here to this guy, right? Hey, what is unsustainable? And right now it just doesn't seem like it's anything. Like, he's shooting the puck more, but why is that going to change? The zone entry is the same. Everything is that's matching up with the stat sheet seems and the eye test, like, all of it is just in complete sync. There's no real outlier stat here for him where you're like, oh yeah, this is going to drastically change. So yeah, I think that you're just riding it out. Okay, so two more quick things before you go. One is, just because you touched on Sundin and you wrote about it, you know, his presence and you love the touch, and everybody did, right? And it's a reminder of how special he is to this fan base too, right? Like, if you're my age, you loved him. He was 100% your hero for so many people who grew up Maple Leafs fans. And you wrote that he's going to be here during All-Star Week, which I forgot was actually even happening here. But do you think that he, like, there could be some type of international role that does come for him, like a way of actually, because, like, he's always going to be attached to the franchise like this. If they have an event in Europe, obviously he's going to be there. But do you see this connection in any way becoming an actual, you know, a real tangible business relationship again?
Yeah, I think there's potential for it. And like, two big things. And one is, he's got 3 young children, right? Mm-hmm. And he's heavily involved in his son's hockey and just wanted a few years to just be a dad. And he's kind of a, you know, he's a captain of the Maple Leafs. He's not entirely low profile, but he is kind of modest and he's not mm-hmm. out there, out and about all the time. So I think that's one of the things, now that his kids are starting to get a little bit older. And the other thing to me is, I look at Nick Lidstrom and he basically provided the blueprint. So he's a VP with the Red Wings, has been, mm-hmm. I want to say maybe 3 years now, but he doesn't live in Detroit. He lives over here and has his normal lifestyle. But the allure of being more involved in hockey and being an official part of the Red Wings nagged at him enough after a while that he's fully involved and he's out scouting games. And, you know, he's there for a phone call when Yzerman wants to bounce ideas off about who he should get or what he's seeing. So I could see something more like that. Would Matt Sundin move back to Toronto? I didn't get that feeling.
Yeah.
But I think this is a really positive week last week, him just being around the team. It wasn't just to give them a pep talk and drop a puck. He was just in, you know, civilian clothes watching their whole practice from the stands, just kind of, you know, just taking it in. And then chatting with Nylander after and just being around, just kind of soaking it in. And, you know, I think in the past his appearances have been a little bit more brief, but he went to dinner with Shanahan and Trey Living and Keith and him the one night. So I think this was a positive step. And I think Lidstrom, you know, laid out a blueprint that he could potentially take on down the road. I think it would be great.
It would be awesome.
How great is it that Alfredson's now back welcoming to the fold with the Senators? Like, he's such a big deal. He's an all-time leader.
Yeah.
And goals, assists, and points. Like, you need him in the fold.
I completely agree. I don't think that there is enough of a presence from some of the great, like, Leafs alumni, the best Leafs alumni. You're never going to have him here. Like, I talked to Peter Forsberg last summer, and we were talking about Matt Sundin for a little while. And there is, I will say, from hearing about his life, and the things Forsberg says, there's 0% chance he's coming back to Toronto anytime soon. Like, his life there, he's pretty happy with it. He's built a big house. He's got the kids. I'm not expecting that kind of thing. I just think it would be cool to have some type of a role where, there's a little bit more of a, connection to the franchise. The Lidstrom one, I think that's the good one. And I do wonder if something will potentially get announced or that they work on that to try to have that rolled out during All-Star Week when he is here. Okay, so this is the big question about the team. Do you actually feel as though, this one was also in your piece, quote, this is Matthews, it's one of those trips for me that you really come together as a team, you spent a lot of time together, and I think that we're ready for a couple of days away from each other, end quote. And he said that with, a smile on his face. But, you're around this team a lot. Did you feel some kind of a material shift in the way that they were interacting with one another or just, the overall energy around the team, the chemistry of the team, the off-ice feeling around the team?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they all say it was a great bonding experience, and I hope it was. I'm around them, but I'm around them when they're at the rink. I'm not around them when they're having their dinners with me. You know, I think one thing about the team, and I don't think it means they're clicky, but I do think the Swedes have always hung together, which just makes natural sense. And there's five of them on the team now, so they can all speak Swedish. And I think this is a great opportunity for the non-Swedes to kind of get a better understanding of what their life is like, what their culture is like, for those guys to step up and play tour guys a little bit. I don't know. Time will tell. I think if they go on a run, we'll point back and say, oh, it was such a great bonding trip, their European vacation, and Willie was the star, and they bonded, and they got to spend extra time together. And if it falls apart, then we might spin it the other way, that this workout. That's just kind of what we do. Mm-hmm. But when Matthew said that, it was tongue in cheek, right?
Of course.
But I think it's kind of like, I love my family, but if I'm with them for 7 days in a row, all day, all night, I might want a little break too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So last one, you wrote on Klingberg, and then you go back to the fjords and the ice and the healthy people, the beautiful people and the fun. Quote from your piece from John Klingberg. It's always been this way through my career, but I've been able to deal with it. And he's referencing an injury and work through it. But it kind of hit rock bottom here these last few weeks, end quote. Yeah. So he's skating, but he's in pain. He didn't play in Sweden, which has got to be the biggest sign. And I know he tried to kind of downplay the meaningfulness of him playing in Sweden. But flat out, you think he plays another game for the Maple Leafs?
I think he wants to. I think he wants to get healthy to the point where he can. Mm. But the signs are bad. So he participated one light morning skate, and that was after that I got to talk to him. And he said that his mobility didn't feel right, and he felt like he was in pain, and I don't know if I'm going to play the next day. And then he tried to practice, and it was 5 or 10 minutes into practice, he left the ice and walked off. This is concerning. And have to at least ask the question if we're heading to LTI with this guy. But the other thing is the player has to buy into that. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a competitor, and I think he's a proud guy, and he wants to get back playing. Mm. It's just, he said it's been something he's been dealing with his whole career. And I think it was in 2014, he had double hip surgery, and that, no one wants to come out explicitly and say what it is, mm-hmm. but that seems to be the speculation, just because he's had those surgeries, and that would align with how he's describing how it feels out there.
You feel for the guy, especially given that he was just a complete whipping boy for the few games that he did play here. But that's a tough one. That's tough if he's Because so far they've had the guys like, yeah, Matt Murray seemed to willingly go to LTIR. I wondered if this was just going to be like a more of a loophole situation where it was, eh, he could play, but the two parties are just, they've decided kind of together, hey, take your money and be quiet about it. But yeah, reading your piece and yeah, hearing you talk about it now, it seems, yeah, pretty clear that he's heartbroken, that this is serious, and yeah, that this is going to be a little bit more complicated than maybe some of us thought it was going to be. Luke, thanks for doing this. Thank you for feeling like some kind of way about the people here sending you there and you feeling like you had to do work. Like, you're very different than me. I would have been like, I'm so sorry my cell didn't work. I dropped it when I went ice fishing and I just was unable to do anything. But yeah, man, enjoy the rest of the trip and safe travels back home.
All right. Thanks a lot.
See you, brother.
Thanks, Eddie. Bye.
Luke Fox, senior NHL writer for Sportsnet. Yeah. I think, okay, all of us in Toronto, right? We're very passionate about the hockey team. There's a reason why they use it's the passion that unites us, right? And why that stuck. Because people are like, yeah, it's a real thing. Klingberg's play 100% deserved criticism. He was bad. There was some moments where it was just like down, just dreadful, dreadful, dreadful stuff. But yeah, when I was reading that and now getting the perspective of just the weight of the fan base when the guy's a whipping boy, the weight of the media scrutiny that comes when someone's a whipping boy, and then seeing a guy go like, man, I was like really hurt. I've had like multiple surgeries and I'm just really trying to get out there and play the game that I love and couldn't do it. So I was like, ah, I'm sorry. I feel like everybody's just got to take a big old, I'm sorry. All right, man. Hey, best of luck to you in your career. I don't think, I hear what Luke's saying about the guy being better and wanting to get back out there and wanting to play again, but it's hard for me to envision that he ever plays for the Leafs again, just given that if he's this in this much pain and he's not ready to go play for the team. I don't, the delayed decision is a bit of a weird one. Like, I don't know what to really read into that. The fact that just like they keep waiting and waiting and waiting to actually announce the decision. But based on this team's needs, which is very clear on the blue line, his cap hit, his potential for LTIR and his injury, I don't know how he ever plays for the Leafs again. Like, I don't see how that works. Like, he goes on LTIR, by the time he'd be potentially ready to come back, they've already replaced him. If he does want to come back, they're using him as a salary to go out the door for whatever trade that they're doing, and they're using some kind of sweetener to make sure the team takes that contract. Like, I just don't see the path back. Barring some kind of real run of injuries to the Leafs, lining up with him being healthy, like it's a point of desperation for both sides. Like, I just think that's where they're at. And it might have already been that he was playing in some of these games because the Leafs were so desperate for defensemen. Like, yeah, let's not forget what the blue line, like, it's been Benoit and Lagesson have been fine in terms of filling in and sort of stabilizing things as a bottom pair. But there was a real moment there where those guys, the injuries were starting to rack up. And you went, holy crap, this blue line is really paper thin. And they're playing four guys. So kudos to him if he actually, like, you know, gutting it out and playing through the pain and trying to make something happen. But yeah, I think that, I don't want to say his career's over, but I think that his Leafs tenure's over. Anyways, let's do a quick break. Let's come back. Let's hit what we missed. By the way, weird thing, it's not weird at all. But little wrench potentially for the Leafs. Calgary, 5-1-2 in their last eight. Everybody kind of wrote that off and was like, hey, don't worry, they're going to blow up the season. Then you're reminded, oh, right, it's the NHL. There's a ton of parity here. Well, actually, it's just pro sports now. Everybody's mediocre. It's hard to find the teams that are special. That's why I root for the Astros. Even though they cheated, I wanted to see them in another World Series going, hey, you matter. You're a team that actually has something different rather than the rest of it. Why I hate seeing the Chiefs have no wide receivers for Patrick Mahomes. I want to feel like you're watching something special, something awesome. I don't want all the teams to be the same. But yeah, Flames being red hot. I think that does change. I don't know if it does, actually. I should just say I have no clue, but I wonder if it changes the math at all on some of their guys that were going to be available, because we've basically been having it, hey, they're going to trade all these dudes, and do I think that it probably still makes a lot of sense for them to try to sell high on some defensemen who are unrestricted? Is Zadorov definitely getting moved after requesting a trade? Like, for sure him, right? But we had those conversations about Hanifin I think it was Myrtle and I, a couple weeks ago, and how that's actually what Toronto really needs. And the idea of pushing all your chips into the middle to try to bring in some good defensemen, some obvious upgrade defensemen, but not the ones that really, like, yeah, more of what we saw last year when they brought in Jake McCabe, which was, hey, this is a good player, but he's not a great player, and he's going to come with a lot of flaws in the postseason. Be nice to see them bring in, like, the actual stud, the stud minutes eater that you feel uber confident about when they're eating the over 20 minutes of ice time in the postseason. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up. All right. Armin was at the Christmas party.
Hey.
Drew didn't go. Did you work, Drew?
I had football.
Oh, you had football.
Yeah. Oakville, man.
Sorry, you guys.
Are you coaching?
No, playing.
Flag?
Yeah, flag.
Okay,
yeah.
I was going to say, I know you're a big boy and you played, like, real football, but I was like, what's going on here? This
guy's carrying a bunch of independents that pulled up.
Yeah, I'm also a championship-winning flag football quarterback. Not to brag, two times, no big deal. Yeah, go ahead. But yeah, dominant.
Big dog.
Yeah, very much a Chad Pennington type. Like, no huge arm strength, but just throws a dime. Beautiful spiral. Like, I'm going to put it on you. You're within 25, I'll dime you. You're beyond, it's a little shaky. Like a little shaky noodle arm. Anyway, what we miss?
So there was this couple in London, England, that brought up what their restaurant menu said to them. So I thought you would definitely like this one.
I do love these topics. I eat out a lot. Like, I go out, you know, I enjoy a good restaurant. So I feel like I'm in a good position. It's part of the reason that you live in the city. So I try to take advantage of it. But, yeah, so what's the story?
I've also never told you that I worked in restaurants for, like, 8 years. But
I think you did tell me that.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, but so, what'd you do?
I served and bartended.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I can see that. Yeah, Armin's a cool bartender. That works. That fits who you'd be. Can you make a good cocktail, though?
Yeah. My like, the shitty thing is...
The what?
Sorry. The crappy thing is that my friends expect me to have the cocktails, like, ready now. But anyways, imagine you walked into a restaurant and you opened the menu and it said, just tap water? Again? Yes, you can just have tap water, but please remember, we're running a restaurant, not a charity. Wink, wink. We need to make money.
I think this is insane business practice. I'm going to make this a little bit more general a second about, you know, the ways that I think restaurants do kind of try to guilt you, or the way that they treat you. Just, all right. Everybody knows that you're a business, okay? No one's showing up and thinks that you're a charity. Although this does remind me that I did have a once great business idea of something called Charity Bar, which is that everything that you buy, a portion of the sales go to charity, and that it would be really a trendy place to be, so you feel good about yourself. You're going out and you're like, should we get the nachos? It's like, well, a dollar of these nachos, like, it's a little bit more overpriced, but that's everywhere in Toronto now, right? Like, speaking of cocktails, I love that one day fairly recently, like a couple of years ago, every cocktail in the city just automatically became like $14. Minimum. It was like, okay, this is just a universal price. It's like $14 to $21. You go to some places and they're like, that's a $22 cocktail. And you're like, it's just a little bit of booze in a glass, right? Some garnish, that's $22? Like, I saw a Twitter account I really like yesterday, actually, Fullerman, talk about how he feels completely taken advantage of when he's at a movie theater, because it's like, yeah, there's I think it's the movie theater popcorn, the markup on it. I feel the same way whenever I get a cocktail. I'm like, okay, I shouldn't have to tip then for this, because if you're taking in this on a cocktail in some of these bars, and you know the ones I'm talking about, because there's a million cocktail bars in Toronto now, and there's a ton of fancy ones, and I love a cocktail bar. Don't get me wrong, I don't want to complain, but these servers are grinding. The cocktail makers are working their asses off, and you go, well, I have to tip through the roof. Like, I have to tip this guy. This is actually a physically demanding job. You go to the cocktail bars where you only get the, like, two-hour table, because they're just churning out people. They're like, get out of here. We're so busy the entire time. It's packed to the wall. You're accepting sitting at some terrible table in this bar because you just can't wait for the cocktails they're going to make, and they're delicious. But then they go, the cocktail's $24, and then also you better be tipping this guy because he was grinding for you. So there's got to be some kind of a break point between this, because it's just outrageous. But, yeah, There's two things to this. One is the idea that they did this and thought this would be a good idea and, like, make people read that and go, aw, this is just a lesson for business and in general. When you try to make yourself a sympathetic figure and you're not really sympathetic, it's a bad look. Don't do this. Don't do this. The idea that you would say to your customers anything other than like, hey, thanks for spending your time here. Thank you for your patronage. And actually putting it as, hey, we're running a business on a charity. Hey, like, you should really respect being here a little bit more. I think it's a really stupid. That's kind of a one-off. That's not something that I expect to see like in other places. But I will say it does sort of speak to the attitude of the bar and restaurant business right now and since COVID, which is we treated them like frontline healthcare workers. It was like, support your bars and restaurants, support your bars and restaurants. And everybody did that, and they had to jump through hoops, man. I'm not saying it wasn't hard. Like, I'm not saying it wasn't hard for servers. I'm not saying it wasn't hard for bars and restaurant owners. Like, what a grind. Tough. Horrible. Already an impossible business, and it was made even more impossible. And again, some of the hoops that you'd, like, the regulations.
The inventory problems.
Yeah, dude, like, everything. It
keeping
was a,
things cold.
It was an absolute nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare. It really, really, really was. And people lost businesses. That's real stuff. That's awful, awful, awful stuff. But it really, there is now this attitude of every single place you go to, they're like, you're lucky that you're here. You're lucky that we even have you. I think that part of the servers leaving in general has affected the quality of service. Like, some people just didn't come back. And so you saw a lot of new servers that are taking on jobs and maybe they're just not good at it. But there's a lot of places that are just understaffed in general that you go to, and they've tried to kind of cut costs that way and have fewer people working in the bar or the restaurant than they should. And so your service isn't as tip top. But like, nothing drives me more insane than, and I, like, I've talked about tipping on the show before, but when I go to a place and the service is bad and they're clearly like, they're not doing anything for you. Like, they're not, they're just, they are literally just like handing you the drinks. There's a dip in service, and then you get that machine and the bottom option they have is 18%.
Sometimes even 20 now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, the bottom option they have is that. Like, it's nuts. And so I do think that a lot of this is kind of the culture of a place. It's like, you used to go to a restaurant, you used to go to a bar, and people were like, hey, we're really appreciative that you would spend your hard-earned money here. Hey, we're really appreciative that you wouldn't just crack a beer, that you wouldn't go to the LC, and you wouldn't just go grab a selection of booze and spend, you know, way less. That you would actually come here and want to be in the environment. That there was more, to me, it's like the only thing that they're selling now, a lot of these places, is like, isn't it cool that you're here? Isn't it cool that you're at this cool place that was on some list on some blog TO article or something, you know, like made it to one of those TikTok. There's that, those TikToks that are going around of,
a lot.
The bars and restaurant owners that are like, what's the coolest underground spot? They're like, this is my cool underground spot. And then people want to go there. And then those places do blow up from that stuff, right?
100%.
Like, they get a lot of business and people want to go there because it's trendy, because it's good for Instagram, because it's good for whatever. So they have these spots that are really hard to get a table at. But then you go to some of these places, and I've done the same thing. Like, I'm still dating in the city. Like, I take people out and I go to a lot of these spots. And you go and you're like, this place sucks. This is like, I'm spending $20 on a cocktail. It takes forever for me to get a new one. Like, it's expensive as hell in here. I don't feel welcome in any way. It feels like a lot of the places, especially with like the 2-hour time limit, they're like clocking you the second you're in there. There's no like, hey, welcome. Hey, chill out. Hey, it's like, hey, you're 45 minutes away from your time. Do you want to maybe like order? Do you want to get more right now? Do you want to give us more money right now because you're so lucky to be here? And then here's the bill, and then get the hell out, please. Like, hurry up, get out.
Because like, if you buy a bottle of wine to start, they might give you a little leave.
Dude, but that's what I'm saying. It's just, it's nuts. It's nuts right now. And it's like,
there's like this smugness in the industry too. When you work in it too, it's like the table that gets two waters and orders like salad or dessert. It's like, yeah, people are talking.
Yeah, do you think I'm being unfair as a server?
No. Most of the stuff you say is like true. I've never really had anything you've said about serving or restaurant culture that I've been like, no, that's wrong.
And like, again, don't get me wrong. I appreciate, like, I've never worked in a kitchen. I've never done a service job like that. Like, I think I've done other like service, like I used to be a mover. Like, I've done these kind of, having a bad customer and having a bad day and being tipped poorly. But it's like, remember the movie Waiting? And everyone was like, this is exactly what it's like to work in a restaurant. This is exactly probably not you guys because you're too young. But yeah, there was a movie called Waiting. And I remember all my server friends were like, this is so much about it. Like, but it felt like a hustle and a grind. And it felt like, yeah, you were underappreciated. And that, like, it really was at the time overlooked how hard the serving job was. And that people did take it for granted. And they did treat servers poorly. and that you could get really stiffed on a bill and that, you know, you would be hustling your ass off all night long and it was all for kind of like nothing. And I don't know. It just takes... Sometimes now I feel like we talk about like servers like it's like firefighters.
Yeah,
like,
I think we've like, gone the other way. Yeah, the pendulum so swung too
like,
far.
The amount of people that are like, you know, the dating red flag, they're like, how I know you're an evil person is if you're rude to a server. I'm like, first of all, I've never seen that because everyone's terrified of servers. But second of all is like, yeah, there's just no bar of decent service that you have to give anymore. The customer is not always right anymore. It's just like the customer is always, you better bend the knee. You better be ready to do whatever it takes to satisfy your server. You better be cool to your server. You better be nice to them. You better tip that place. I just think the relationship is a little backwards. I really do. Okay. Off this for a minute because I'll do another sports thing. Didn't see, obviously, the entire Raptors game yesterday because I did go to the holiday party. Mm-hmm. The Raptors clearly made the right pick in Scottie Barnes over Suggs. Like, it's a no-brainer. Guy won Rookie of the Year, and he's a much better player. But this is why I was so enamored with Suggs when he was at Gonzaga. This is why I so desperately wanted him to be the Raptors pick. And I was wrong, like I was. I wanted Suggs. Scottie was the right pick. He is the right pick. You wouldn't even be close in a trade if Orlando picked the phone and was like, hey, we're thinking about something along. Like, the Raptors would be like, yeah, what else? Like, plus, 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 plus. But I, like, Raptors fans got a little window into what kind of a player that guy is. He is just a dog, man. He is just a winner. And that was the thing I always loved about him. It was like, he was a football player and he was a basketball player. He's like a two-sport athlete. And one, if I was a GM, I would 100% be targeting the two-sport athletes always. I think, like, the professionalization of sports and all the stuff of, like, hey, you've got to get into being an athlete in this sport. You got to pick your sport by the time you're, like, 13 or whatever. I think that's insane, right? Like, one of the things I love about Bo, and I was talking about this with Blair last night at the Christmas party. One of the things I love about Bo is, like, he's a tennis player. He was awesome at two things. Like, he learned other skills from playing tennis. I think, like, when you play other sports, you see the similarities and you see different, you just see the sport a different way. And it's something that I think is being a little bit lost in the way that we're now developing athletes. So I love a two-sport athlete. And it also shows you that this guy loves to just ball. This guy just likes to compete. That's what it says. When you have someone where it's like, man, it was really hard for me to choose the sport. That's like, okay, so no one was making you play this. You weren't just doing this because you were good. You were doing this because, like, any time you could pick up a ball and you could hit a court and you could hit a field, whatever, you were doing it. You couldn't wait. And that's the Jalen Suggs thing, is he just clearly, like you mentioned it, the back-to-back possessions, right? Like, close the game, like the two plays that he makes. You know, like, not too many guys in the league just do that with that consistency, right? And I've said this before about Hyman and how just feels like Toronto has tried to fill the void of Hyman for a really, really long time, that they've never quite had that same energizer type that is playing in the top six. And at first it was like, oh, he doesn't have good hands. And like, you're looking at the weaknesses of a guy and then he goes away and you're like, holy crap, that's actually one of the most important things you can have on a team, especially now in modern day sports where there's just fewer and fewer of those guys. Let's be honest. There's not a ton of Jalen Suggses anymore in the NBA of guys where you feel like they're going to show up every single night and dig in defensively.
Rip you.
Yeah, rip the ball out, try to get up for every single block, try to just play at 110% on every single possession. And
Like Josh Hart's like that.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Josh Hart.
But, yeah, Josh Hart is like that, except for Suggs is just, to me, way more athletic and just, like, he's going to be a phenom when it comes to his defensive play. He's just going to be a really good player for a really, really long time. He's going to have a, you know, I think... This feels a little far, but I actually think that he's going to have like an Andre Iguodala kind of career where it's like, here's this super athletic guy that can defend multiple positions, that does everything right, that's really bouncy, that you don't feel great about the three, but is going to have the odd game where he knocks down a ton of them and just is a big game player, right? I feel like he's going to be one of those dudes. But the biggest takeaway for me yesterday from that Raptors game was the thing I had to get you guys to kind of shut up about before the show started. The Magic have always kind of been in the Raptors' pocket, like, for a long time, right? For a while, it's kind of like they got Weltman there, and they just, you know, they would grab T-Ross, we'd make the trades with them, they did the Ibaka trade up here. They beat them pretty handily. Remember, they lost in 2019. They lose the first game to Orlando, and everyone was kind of like mad at the way they lost. But then they just put Orlando in their pocket. And like for years, it was just like, you know, when Gasol was here, he dominated Vucevic, and it just like they were just one of those franchises that felt like they couldn't figure it out. Since Dwight, since that year they made the championship run, it's been a they can't figure it out franchise.
Yeah, meddling.
Yeah, and they're flawed and they're young. They're super young. And so they make, like, I was watching them a couple of weeks ago where they almost blew a lead against a Utah team that just had some vets because they were falling apart at the end of the game because they were like, oh, just give Powell the ball. Like, whatever. This is our whole offense is just trying to figure it out through him. We don't really seem to have a plan and the players are kind of crumbling and they don't know how to play together properly. And, you know, Wagner is getting taken out of it a little bit too easily. I'm like, man, they got a lot of growing pains that they're going to have to go through. And you know who made the winning play at the end of the game? It was Jalen Suggs for them. But the big thing that I'm getting to here is you can really feel like the magic of past the Raptors and just like a directionless team that you didn't feel like had anything going on and was a lot of drafts of like Jonathan Isaac types where you went, what exactly is this? But they made the right move, which was they sold Vucevic high, which the Raptors have not done with anybody, right? Where they picked a direction and they said, yep, we've got a guy who wants to be here and he's a good enough player. He's a solid enough player. But yeah, Chicago, you want to give us what for him? Cool. Like, we'll take that deal. We'll take that trade. They started to pick a direction. They were like, we're rebuilding. We're going young. We're building around our young talent. And you're just starting to see the fruits of that labor. Where they've got a super young team with a bunch of, and it's funny because they've got a lot of what like the Raptors wanted, right? Which is a bunch of tall, long guys that can defend multiple positions and that are really, really tough to score on when they put their best defensive lineup out there. But yeah, it was just, it felt a little annoying to see the Orlando Magic get their act together and be what is like an exciting and competent franchise. And I like that because I grew up on Shaq and Penny. So I've always had like a little bit of an affinity for the Magic and I like them. I see their jerseys and it's almost aesthetically pleasing to me because it reminds me of like that nostalgia. But yeah, it's just, they're two teams in completely opposite directions. And they're two teams that coming into the season, like if you want to play the game where you're like, oh, well, the Raptors have time and you know, they want to, okay. But it's been years of this for the Raptors. And this just tells you about like how bad the murky middle is the Raptors are in the middle, but they were also supposed to be more competitive than that Magic team this year. Like they've got Siakam. They've still got OG. They've got Scottie. They've got the rookie of the year. Like this isn't a team. They've got Jakob Poeltl. Like they brought in Schroeder. This is not supposed to be a team that just, you know, is bottoming out and tanking out. And just to kind of see the Magic be so better positioned for the future, but also have a team that's just as good, if not better, for the win now. Like, that's the frustrating thing about this. And the more you see, because it's like, when you lose to the Milwaukee Bucks, right? You're like, yeah, whatever. It's the Milwaukee Bucks. When you lose the odd game where your team just plays like crap, like the game that almost happened with the Wizards, right? You go, okay, well, that's kind of that's a bad game, but maybe it's a fluky game and you're trying to find an explanation as to why it happens. The most frustrating ones for me are the teams that come in and like, or that beat Toronto that are like the Magic, where it's, well, you're not better than the team that was rebuilding and they've got just now almost everything better than you. How do you explain that? How are you not at least the team that's in the middle that is tough to play against and winning a bunch of games and has a solid record, but like you're supposed to be at least around and above 500 and another game drop. So congrats. They can beat the Pistons. They can beat the Wizards. They can beat the Spurs. They had one really good game this year. That was Dallas. Like the game against Minnesota was fortuitous timing. I'm sorry. It really was. And the win against the Bucks was when the Bucks were kind of in a tailspin and they just like ran out to a huge lead in the game and then they just never really recovered. The Bucks kind of sat down and quit on it. So yeah.
Raps should look at them. They could be stuck in the middle for 10 years too.
Yeah. That was a really like looking at the box score and looking at the highlights this morning and just watching it casually in the bar. I was just kind of sitting there with some real frustration over that one. I think that's only going to continue to build the more that they have those experiences. Anyway, subscribe to the podcast, leave 5 stars, do all those things, and we'll see you tomorrow. Yeah, finally, Robert Murray, we're going to get him on and talk about a lot of these Blue Jays rumors. We'll see you then.